Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and today we feature part two of our talk with Dr. Nigel Gurgra, Chief Wellness Officer at Ochsner Health Systems and the Medical Director of Liver Transplantation at Ochsner Medical Center. He's going to continue discussing the impact of administrative burden on clinical practice. Nigel, welcome back. In the last episode, we discussed the administrative burden has done to clinical practice, and in what ways has the government intervened to try or even alleviate this problem?
Well, it's good to be back, Tom. Again, pre-COVID, CMS introduced this initiative called Patients Over Paperwork. Mm-hmm. And largely, this was an effort to simplify coding and documentation requirements that lead to this unnecessary admin time that we've talked about and that are not value added. Like over time in the fee-for-service era, the medical record had become kind of a ransom note for payment. And this had led to note bloat and just a lot of unnecessary time sort of putting into the creating notes and coding and documentation. So that's one thing. And that was just introduced in January of this year. Last week, I heard, along with many of you, the American Rescue Plan Act. And I was pleased to hear that within that $1.9 trillion, I think there are some millions of dollars that have been earmarked to support the mental health needs of our healthcare workers. And then I will say, with COVID, there was a highly publicized and tragic suicide in April of Dr. Lorna Breen, who was a prominent ER physician in the Northeast. And a few months following that, Senators Cassidy, Kane, and others introduced bipartisan legislation to support healthcare professionals' mental health. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but at least it's elevating the dialogue and the profile of this very important topic.
So there has been some improvement, but have these efforts actually shown any success in the short time?
I think it's really too early to know. I would agree with you that promoting important things like complexity of medical decision-making, rather than checking off boxes on the review of systems or the physical exam, I think that's more valuable, or how much time you're spending with the patient. So you think intuitively that will reduce clerical work that we were talking about. And you think intuitively over time that will promote professional fulfillment and well-being. But I think it's too early to say. I will also say, I mentioned I came from Toronto. Mm-hmm. I was in Toronto for, and many of you may not remember this, but SARS-1 in 2003. And SARS-1 was a much more limited, clearly in scope, to COVID. But one of the silver linings from SARS-1 was that there were well-documented and well-studied mental health sequelae in our frontline healthcare workers, such as PTSD. And that led to two things. One thing was leaders normalizing the discussion about mental health. I remember my physician in chief, Alan Detsky, really being vulnerable and really talking about how he struggled through SARS-1. So that was one thing. And the other silver lining was several agencies and regulatory boards sort of revisiting questions about mental health. We'll see what happens following COVID, but hopefully with this horrible pandemic, we will see, you know, some good things come out of this.
I believe, Nigel, that a lot of innovation occurred during the pandemic. And I think we'll learn more as we start hopefully finding this early post-pandemic era that we expect in the second half of the year.
I agree completely. So we talk about emotional exhaustion back in March and April, and clearly people were working harder than ever. But one of the things that goes into emotional exhaustion is not just caring for the patient, but is some of those regulatory considerations, economic considerations. And there was an agility and a focus that took place. We were told, forget about the economics for a while. It's all about the patient. It's all about the community. There was a renewed sense of pride in our profession. And I think those things kind of mitigated some of the effects of this horrible pandemic. And we did see great things happen in terms of different rules about telehealth that I think would have taken years to take place. So there has been some good things that have come out of this.
Completely agree. So we mentioned about a kinder, gentler CMS, but what can our organizations actually do about decreasing clinical burden?
A great question. So I think the first step for any practice or healthcare system is to recognize what we've been talking about, that physician and employee well-being is a key, if not the leading quality indicator that drives outcome. So again, as we stated in our last episode, if you're an organization that's interested in patient experience, you should be interested in well-being. If you're an organization that's interested in quality and safety outcomes, you need to be invested in well-being. Even if you're solely interested in financial performance, you need to be interested in well-being. So I think the first step is recognizing the importance. And then the second step is measuring the state of well-being. So you can't improve something you're not measuring. Mm-hmm. And that means establishing a primary metric, so actually measuring engagement and measuring well-being. which will be the holy grail of improving things, but also identifying secondary measures of success. So I talked about pajama time. We can measure that, and we need to track that, and we need to improve that. I measured teamwork. We can measure team-based documentation. We need to measure that and track that. And then also, I think we need to establish process metrics of success. So how many physicians are going through leadership training? How many physicians are going through optimization training sessions with their electronic health record system? So that's the second thing. The third thing is, I think, as has happened at Ochsner, you need to put a stake in the ground and resource an office of professional well-being or an equivalent office led by an executive level leader, chief wellness officer. And then if you're doing all these great things, you have to communicate them. So you have to develop a robust communication rhythm. And by communication rhythm, I'm not just talking about top down, but a way to interact with your patient-facing employees and have them communicate up to you.
What great suggestions. The importance of actually real team-based care, the importance of helping our colleagues with tools and resources to be efficient, and then a bilateral means with a cadence of communication from not only top to bottom, but bottom to top, which is just as important. Love it.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the work that you've done actually at Ochsner?
Yeah. Well, again, I keep going back to pre-COVID and during COVID. So over 2018 and 2019 pre-COVID, we were pretty deliberate in terms of our developing a strategic plan. And we were really intent on putting strategy before tactics. And in 2019, we enlisted the help of project management and we developed and announced a strategic plan that had four fundamental pillars. The first pillar was this concept of promoting advanced team-based care. So how do we get everybody on the care delivery team practicing at the top of their license? The second strategic pillar was around practice automation. And basically, that's improving our EHR. Our third pillar was around resilience at the individual, team, and organizational level. And then the fourth pillar was around enhancing our communication, not just vertical communication, but how our physicians and providers communicate with each other. We'd set up large multidisciplinary work groups and we'd started to develop initiatives. I'll just give some examples. One was the EHR, which is basically badge login, which for a busy clinician can save 25, 30 minutes a day rather than logging in every time you go to the computer. We really stepped up our EHR optimization classes for those that were struggling. And we developed a decision support committee that literally eliminated millions of clicks and unnecessary alerts from our EHR. Then COVID hit the whole country, but early on, I think we were really affected. We had one of the highest per capita hospitalization rates. Mm-hmm. And it seemed clear that two things had to happen. One, we needed to broaden our scope. So pre-COVID, the scope of focus was just our employed physicians and APPs. At a necessity, our scope broadened to all 30,000 employees. We were an office of professional well-being for all our employees. The second thing is that we needed to sort of get down Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So it's pretty tough for anybody to come to work if they're worried about their own physiology and safety. So if they're worried, is my salary going to be safe? Are they worried that their colleagues are going to get furloughed? Will there be enough PPE? Will there be child support for my kids? And I think I can't take credit for this. Our organization's response was close to perfect. And regular communication. Over the course of 72 hours, we put together child support for those employees that needed it. And our office specifically partnered with our behavioral health service line to lead efforts to promote resilience. We did a lot of unit-based rounding on those units that were most distressed, held a lot of debriefing sessions, created 24/7 crisis support lines, and tried to diversify our mental health offerings for our employees.
That is fantastic work. And hopefully many of our listeners will actually take that back to their own organizations because I definitely consider it best practice.
Yeah, I agree.
Nigel, any parting words for our members?
Sure. I'd just like to go back to a previous point I made about the necessity to destigmatize mental health issues in our profession. I think along with the military, if you call them industries, the two industries where these sort of discussions have been most stigmatized, Tom, there was a study that came out of Mount Sinai Hospital in New York last month that looked at PTSD in wave one amongst frontline healthcare workers at that hospital. And PTSD, or generalized anxiety, was seen in around 39% of their frontline healthcare workers. So we have to anticipate this. And as we emerge from the pandemic, we need to diversify our mental health offerings. We need to be proactive. So catch people early, not just wait till we hear about the code blue and have them come to a crisis support line. And then again, we need to, as leaders, role model these conversations and be a little vulnerable. And I just want to sort of close that. Well, I'll just share a little bit of myself. So in July, August, generally, I struggle a bit. And I know the reasons why. It's because it marks the anniversary of the birth of my son, Bennett, and then the following year, his death. And this was a while ago now, but I'm able to compensate by doing things like going home to Canada to visit friends and loved ones. I had a knee injury this year, which prevented my ability to exercise. And so I had this aha moment that everybody has their story. And so I sent an open letter to all 30,000 employees back in September that was called How Are You Really?, in which I shared a little bit of myself. And the response rate to that was overwhelming. I think it had the highest executive open rate. And, you know, the replies were often 2 pages long. And I think it really struck a chord with folks. And I hope to keep this conversation going with individuals.
You know, there's power in showing vulnerability. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I think this is an important topic. And I'm confident in what we're doing here at Ochsner. We've made a difference. And I'm confident with what we're going to do in the U.S. in terms of meeting the needs of our folks as we emerge from this pandemic.
Nigel, we've reached the end of our program. It's been a great discussion. I hope it's been a help to our listeners, too. Thanks for taking the time for joining us. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Leadership Medical Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.